Hi, thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Chrissy Mernon, and my guest is Mayor Ron Nirenberg. Last time he was here, it's been a few years, he was running for city council. He obviously won that race, District 8. You were a councilman from when to when?
2013 to 2017.
And then when did you decide, you know, I could be mayor? Or what did you decide about the mayor's
job? You know,
job?
It was over the last couple of years, I've grown increasingly concerned about the loss of momentum of our city and the path of the current leadership, the previous administration, and my own vision for San Antonio diverged to the point where I felt that where I was best served in order to really change the conversation in San Antonio is to change leadership. And so I ran for mayor on the faith that if my vision and my message were better and more resonant with the public of San Antonio, then I would be voted in. If not, I wouldn't. And so here I am.
That's right. Here you are. And what is the vision for San Antonio and the momentum you want to see? And who do you compare us to?
I don't compare San Antonio with any city. I mean, Mark Twain said it best. I think he said that there are four unique cities in America, and San Antonio is one of them. We have a very unique spot on the map. We have a very unique history and heritage, and certainly we have amazing potential in our city to become a better version of ourselves. And so my hope for our city is that we know where we are. We know where we're going in terms of population growth and the growth of the city in general. We are rapidly urbanizing, and all the challenges of a major urban area in the United States are here in San Antonio, from education to job creation to transportation to keeping houses affordable. And we're going to be bigger. There's no doubt about that. There's nothing that we can do to stop it. But if we're going to be better, we need bold leadership, and we need to act proactively on things like building a transportation system to get people out of gridlock. We also have to work together to ensure better educational outcomes no matter what part of San Antonio you live, and also something simple as cost of living, keeping that from rising through the roof as we grow into, modern day San Antonio is extremely important, and it requires a lot of difficult conversations, but proactive leadership, and that's what I want to see from this administration.
So when you look at San Antonio's issues, and, you know, here you represent a District 8, which is considered a north side district, and now you're mayor of the whole community. And so as District 8 councilman, mm-hmm. I'm sure you were aware of the needs of the entire community, but what are the concerns and the problems in San Antonio that you see, like, the city government can work on fixing these?
Yeah, well, I was blessed to be in District 8, where the northwest part of San Antonio along the I-10 corridor, it's the backbone of that district, and it functions very much like the city as a whole. All of the things that you can find in all corners of the city are located in District 8 as well. It's a microcosm. It's a majority-minority district. It has both ends and everything in between of the socioeconomic spectrum. It is culturally diverse. It is politically split right down the middle in terms of conservative and progressive. So the challenges of governing a whole city were the same challenges that I found in District 8. You know, there are several big issues with San Antonio that are not just about infrastructure and services. One of them is that we have one of the most socioeconomically segregated cities in the country, if not the most segregated city in the country on socioeconomics. What that means is that the divide between the communities that have all the resources and outcomes in education and things like that that you would hope for a modern community are significantly different. And there are parts of our town that have languished for decades, generations, with poor infrastructure, poor school outcomes, lower wage jobs, and no access to services like public transportation. This provides us an opportunity to restore some of that equitable investment in our communities to make sure that doesn't matter what part of town you live on, you should expect great quality streets, you should expect growing jobs, you should expect safe communities with adequate police protection and fire protection. And this doesn't require any kind of massive change in the way we do work together as a city, but it does require us to make sure that we're doing one thing well, which is that with our limited resources that we have as a city, we need to match those resources to where they're needed the most. And that's currently where we're at right now with the budget process. We have a big budget for a big city. And we need to make sure that we're not just wasting that money, but we're focusing it on the true basic needs of a city, a diverse city like ours. And that will help lift up communities that have been, again, languishing and underinvestment for a long, long time.
That's a $2.7 billion budget, the largest in the city's history. And I understand the words being used, an equity lens. So how has the budget process, neglected or failed these communities that you're talking about that you want to bring everybody up to the same level?
Right. And so equity is not a catchphrase. What we mean by equity is that we take a look at the whole city and we understand where the needs are, where the streets are crumbling, where better police protection is needed, where certain outcomes in schools can be better supported by the basic services of the city, such as painting crosswalks and ensuring that there's adequate signage, just like you would expect in any other part of town. There are needs that need to be matched with resources. Rather than taking a look at a city and seeing 10 different districts and dividing everything by 10, where there may not be the same level of need, we need to make sure that we're adequately addressing needs with the resources that we have together as a city, as a whole city. And that's what's meant by an equity lens. With regard to what we can do with this year's budget, we are keeping a very, so last couple of years, we've increased the amount of resources that are dedicated to basic road maintenance, filling potholes, making sure that streets or lanes are striped, ensuring that we're painting adequate, painting crosswalks and things like that and building sidewalks. We're going to continue to do that at the same high rate, but we're going to do a little even more in the areas of town that need it the most, focusing in on those neighborhoods that have been crumbling for a long time. And we know where they are. I mean, and if you drive around the city long enough, you can see those areas where they have been underinvested in for a long time. And what happens is we will never improve the condition of those areas of town if we continue just with status quo, where we continue to invest dollars just to maintain the same level of service that has been there for years and years and years. We have to work better, harder, to improve the condition of those neighborhoods, or we'll never catch up.
Is the whole council on board with that? Because you've got 10 districts and 10 fiefdoms, and people are going to have to give up something to help somebody else.
Well, actually, we don't have to give up anything at all. And that's why I mentioned that the street maintenance funding that we have had over the last couple of years is going to remain at the same high level as we have had for the last 2 years. When I came on council in 2013, we had about $45 million a year going towards street maintenance. That, of course, was divided roughly by 10. We increased the total amount to about $65 million in the previous two fiscal years, and we divided that by 10. We're going to continue to fund it at that $65 million level, divided by, of course, 10. We have additional funding that we're going to put in addition to that $65 million that will focus in particular areas of town that again, have been crumbling for a long time. We're not going to divide that part by 10 because, again, if we're just continuing to divide everything by 10, it's going to continue the same condition and the same haves and have-nots with regard to street maintenance that we've had in our city historically. This is maybe something that people are going to have to continue to debate, and there's going to be concern about, well, what about my community? Well, the fact of the matter is every part of the city, every district is going to get the same high level of resources. We can all acknowledge, though, and the reason why we're doing this is because we have been walking the streets. We have talked to neighbors, thousands of neighbors, and they want to ensure that it doesn't matter what zip code you're in, you should have adequate service and adequate infrastructure. The reason why we're doing this is because we're responding to those citizens' concerns. So I think, yeah, maybe there is some conversation we need to have to define equity for some folks. Maybe there's some we do have to look at the city rather than 10 different communities. It's just one community of San Antonio, and that everyone deserves a fair level of infrastructure and services. And I think we're going to continue to move forward on this because it's the right thing to do.
Our guest this morning, Mayor Ron Nirenberg. Now, you've got this Housing Policy Task Force.
Yeah.
And I know there's some housing issues, and it brings up gentrification and a lot of change, especially in the downtown area. You look at Beacon Hill as an example of how property values have shot up. King William. And then you look at the east side, Dignity Hill, Government Hill. I mean, now there's $250,000 homes where there used to be $30,000 homes, a changing area. Poor people are getting pushed out.
Right. Yeah, there's a few things. There's many things going on with housing. The first thing that we need to be cognizant of is that one of the competitive advantages that San Antonio has had over any other city, any other big city in the country, is the fact that we have a great cost of living. So we have to protect that. It's important for our economy, and it's, of course, important for quality of life for people to protect cost of living. We also have to acknowledge that our city is growing, and currently, housing experts tell us we have about a shortage of about 150,000 housing units, affordable housing units. Today in San Antonio, the average family cannot afford the average home being built in San Antonio.
And the average home, you're talking about, like, is it $200,000?
I think the median new home price is around $214,000, or somewhere around there last year. So families in general are being priced out of the San Antonio housing market. That's a big challenge. So two other things is, as San Antonio invests in communities to revitalize, just like we were talking about earlier, revitalize communities just on basic infrastructure, property values are rising to the point where families that have lived in their neighborhoods for generations are being forced out because their property taxes are rising. And we're working with our legislature so that they can provide meaningful property tax relief at the same time. And then I guess the final issue that we have to contend with is the fact that when there are affordable housing units being built, there are some, not enough, but when there are some being built, it's being subsidized. We can't continue on this trajectory in housing in San Antonio and keep things affordable and continue to rely on the public sector to support all of the affordable growth. We have to take a good look at what we're doing as a community to reduce bureaucracy and red tape so that the private development can build houses that are more affordable, that are quality, and that also, by the way, don't force people, neighborhoods, families out of the communities that they've lived in. That's the ills of gentrification. Those are the displacement is the scourge of what we've seen in revitalization of urban communities around the country. So all of these issues are what need to be addressed in a comprehensive manner because everything affects everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's why I appointed this housing task force, which is a small group of five incredible experts, diverse experts that represent Lourdes Castro Ramirez, who is the former deputy assistant secretary of the U.S. Housing and Urban Development, will be chairing the group. Includes Maria Berry-Zaval, who is a champion, former councilwoman, District 1, who is a champion of communities on a lot of issues, in particular housing, and she's been at the leading edge of the push against gentrification and displacement. Jim Bailey is an architect who has an extraordinary vision for building affordable housing, particularly in the urban core of San Antonio. Noah Garcia, who's a finance expert, and has been working in community banking for a number of years, has also worked on the Housing Commission as my appointee. Am I missing anybody? I think that's the five.
And what do you want them to do?
I want them to come up with a framework, unadulterated by politics, a framework of housing, a strategy for us to tackle these issues that will then be the guidance for technical groups to provide recommendations to council for approving our policies. I want to move swiftly because we do have some changes that need to be made right now. And, you know, the growth of San Antonio is not going to slow down because we just appointed a new task force. But I want them to come up with a framework that addresses these issues. It's not going to be the end-all be-all of a comprehensive and compassionate housing policy for San Antonio, but it will be at least a step forward. And we can all agree that doing nothing is not an option, and not confronting these issues, which was the modus operandi of the previous administration, is also not an option. These issues don't go away simply because we're not going to talk about them, but now we're putting them front and center of what this administration is going to accomplish.
And I understand the projection is we're going to have 1 million more people in San Antonio by 2040.
That is the reality.
Where are they going to live? Yeah.
Well, that's the question. And it's not without empirical evidence, too. In fact, that's a conservative projection. The demographers of the state have always underestimated what we have actually seen in population growth. They expect another 1.1 million within the next 25 years. We expect our population to double by 2050, which would put us larger than the city of Chicago. So where those people will live, how they get to and from places in San Antonio, how we protect our natural resources, what kind of jobs they're going to be doing, and you know how their children will go to school and where, it are extraordinary challenges. So, you know, I like to tell people there's a lot of heavy lifting in this administration, and my vision is not just for is not just for 8 years; it's for beyond 8 years. My son's generation. There's a lot of heavy lifting, and there's not a lot of instant gratification to the work that we have to do. But with some faith and with some participation from the public, we can get these things done.
Now, Mayor Ron Nirenberg, you mentioned that these people will be driving, getting to and from their jobs. And so the 1 million more people on roads that at some stages are overtaxed already?
They're already out of control. And I don't need to tell anyone, I don't need to convince anyone of that. You see that when you're staring at taillights on I-10 or 281 or any other neighborhood.
1604, 60% over capacity in the afternoon.
Or one of your neighborhood streets. I mean, take a look at Bandera and Zarzamora and, you know, Military. All these streets are being overburdened. And we're continuing to build roads. I mean, that's what the bulk of our transportation dollars, 98% of our transportation dollars are going to build roadways at the state, the federal, and the local level. I just talked to you about the street maintenance funding. So we can continue to do that at business as usual. Very soon, we will run out of money to do it at the pace that's required, and we'll run out of space. And we all have heartburn when we see trees go down because we want to add another lane somewhere. The truth of the matter is, even if we did that, it will still get worse. That's the truth. The traffic engineers tell us that business as usual will produce a 75% increase in commute times within the next 20 years.
I hear people gasping.
And business as usual will mean that those bottlenecks, those places where your blood pressure rises the most when you're stuck at a light, those will go up 900%. If we do the same thing, build the capacity that we're building right now is at the rate that we're building. And nobody is printing money to take care of transportation either. We know where we are headed, and we can see it when we look up the road in Austin. I used to live in Austin growing up, and for years they were talking about where we are right now in terms of, well, we really need to do something. It's getting bad. It's getting bad. Well, you can't move anywhere in Austin if you go in during rush hour. Now they're having to spend, you know, $700+ million on a bond specifically just to address new roadways. We can avoid that fate. In fact, we have an enormous potential here to do something different. And we have a growing city that has some right-of-way left, that has, I believe, the political will and the public sentiment to do a multimodal, modern-day transportation in San Antonio.
And what does that mean?
Right. It means mass transit. We need to build an option for mass transit, meaning that if you choose to drive your car where you want to go, you can continue to do that, and you can avoid, and you can do that and not have to suffer through traffic because the people who don't want to do that have an option to use. Another 500,000 vehicles in the next 20 years are coming to San Antonio streets. That's the projection. If you want more than that, or if you want to avoid that or ensure that the people who are adding to those roads have something else to get them around, we need to support multimodal transportation. Whether it's light rail or it's some other option, we need to do something other than just roadways. The good news is we won't do rail unless citizens of San Antonio say they want it in a public ballot, in a vote. And we are working to provide an option for that at some point in the near future. The other good news is we're already doing some elements of multimodal transportation in San Antonio. In fact, voters have already approved it. the Greenway Trails Initiative, those great green spaces that have become hike and bike trails that get people around from one park to another have become more than just that. They're starting to connect areas of the city so you can get from point A to point B, whether it's your neighborhood to a retail shopping center, it's your neighborhood, or it's a neighborhood to a school. We're beginning to connect that, and it's one of the most robust greenway trail networks in the entire country. We need to continue to improve those and connect those so that it becomes an option for transportation. We're already doing a bicycle master plan for San Antonio. We need to continue to improve that so it's not just a lane on the side of a road, but it continues to be safe bike routes, and we're advancing that under my watch as well. And then finally, one of the original modes of transportation, your feet. We're working hard to ensure that there's adequate, safe pedestrian options in San Antonio by filling in sidewalks, repairing sidewalks, and also ensuring that there is adequate separation between pedestrians and motorists in areas of town where it's busier, so people feel safer to walk from one point to another. And then all of this is to say, we also have to realize that transportation is not just in a vacuum by itself. Our solutions for transportation also have to include how we plan for land use and development. If we build your job, your office building that you have to commute to 15 miles away from your neighborhood, then, you know, obviously you're going to have to hop in a car, you're going to have to use a bus or something like that. We're trying to also be mindful of ensuring that there's good live, work, play options in different areas of town where we've seen this kind of development already come to the front. People are familiar with the term decade of downtown. Well, it's not just the decade of downtown in San Antonio, it's a decade of downtowns. What we've seen, how San Antonio has developed over the last 30 years, is that there are about 13 different areas of the city where you're seeing a lot of office and job creation. You're seeing schools and residential communities develop, parks. You're seeing pockets of development that function like little cities, little nodes around the city. That provides people options to live where they work or live near where they work and go to school and so forth. You see this happening at La Cantera and the Rim. You see it happening, of course, downtown San Antonio, around Brook City Base, around Port San Antonio, the Forum, Rolling Oaks. All these different areas of town have become nodes where people have the option of living where they work and go to school. And it provides us guidance for connecting what will be ultimately a mass transit system in San Antonio that connects all of these different nodes around our city.
And I know you've traveled a lot as a councilman and now as mayor, I'm sure you've got lots of travel. So when you go to other cities and you see how they get around, don't you think, you know, it'd be great if San Antonio had that?
Yeah, I do.
So who's have you thought, I really like this, you know, we should have this?
So these are all options for us to consider. And back to your first question about, you know, who is San Antonio like? San Antonio is unique, and I don't think we should necessarily prescribe a solution to our issues without actually having, you know, robust public discussion about it. The good news there is that we have. Over the last 5 years, we've been discussing with the public the needs for transportation, and mass transit is what has been brought to us. So it's not the bureaucrats that are driving better transportation in San Antonio. It's the public. They want something better. And you're absolutely right, Chrissy. If you look around the country, San Antonio is the last of the big cities that has no mass transit option. We have a bus service, and it's been inadequately funded, and you can see the results of that. No one really takes the bus if they have a choice of taking something else. And we're going to improve that in San Antonio. The city council is about to make some moves to improve that as well. But we need options, and, you know, look up the road, you know, again, knowing that a rail plan for San Antonio will have to be citizen-driven and voter-approved, you can look up the road in Dallas. Dallas has the longest rail system in the entire country, commuter rail. So there are great examples of how we can do it differently. Which one is right from San Antonio is what we ultimately will be bringing to the voters at their request, and I look forward to that day.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, we just have a couple minutes left. You're going to have to come back some other time. But What is the mayor's job in San Antonio? Do people understand your job?
You know, I think, do people understand my job? I think that the mayor is the voice of the city of San Antonio, which means that it's very important that I'm listening first and also ensuring that we're representing the entire voice of San Antonio. We know that our voting rates are very low in San Antonio. We know there are corners of our community that have felt left out of the entire government process. So it's very important for me to be a voice for all of San Antonio, for all of those communities, and our young people as well, who don't even get the opportunity to vote. That's my first job, is to be the voice of San Antonio. I also consider it one of my primary roles to be a champion for San Antonio, not only here locally and uplifting those things and highlighting those things that we do very well and we should be proud of, but also taking that show and telling the world, telling Texas businesses, telling you know, the entire international community what San Antonio is, what we have to offer, and ensuring that we're driving growth and creativity and ensuring that our young generation has a better San Antonio to inherit. That's a huge role for me. The one that I think people are most familiar with, though, is when I sit on the dais at city council and be a chair, the chairman of our city council, conducting the meeting, setting the agenda, and being the vote, one of the votes on the city council on anything that comes before us for a vote. There are lots of different aspects. People know that we have a council manager form of government, which sometimes is called a weak mayor form of government. We have a city manager that runs the executive team of the city, the staff of the city that really gets the day-to-day operations done that, you know, keep our city functioning. The city council is the board of directors, and I am the chair of that board. But within that role, again, I have the responsibility and the privilege of setting the agenda for our city and articulating the vision, and that's something I take very seriously. If nothing else, I believe that San Antonio is a great city, and it will be an even better one when we give it over to our children. The gap between where we are now and where we get and how we get there, in my opinion, is overcoming sometimes what people would refer to as an inferiority complex. This is a great city. We need our leadership to tell that story to ourselves sometimes. And that's what I look forward to doing most of. There's no reason why the world and us ourselves should not view San Antonio as being one of the great American cities in the world in the 21st century. And I believe that in my bones, and look forward to bringing that to the mayor's office over the next several years.
So what's on your wish list? I've got a list here. The Toyota Mazda plant.
We're going to ensure that that Toyota and the world know that nobody does it better than San Antonio, Texas, as we have shown with the plant that we have now currently. So we're going to make a good run and make a strong proposal for the expansion of that facility. Look forward to watching all that take place and being part of that effort. We also know that I've made some pretty clear statements about us being a big league city. We are in the running for a major league soccer franchise. We're going to be working very hard to ensure that MLS knows that if they are interested in expanding the league, there's not a better option than San Antonio for the future of that league. You know, and then at the end of the day, what I'm most interested in is that the young people that are here today that are just getting back into school now feel good about their city, that they're participating. If I can leave office many years from now and we have voting rates that are higher because people are more interested in taking part in the future of their city, I would have considered that a success.
I want to thank you for stopping by this morning. Our guest, Mayor Ron Nirenberg. People want to get a hold of you. How do they reach you?
Yeah, just come down to the office or shoot us an email. I can be reached via email. You can find us on Facebook at Nirenberg, N-I-R-E-N-B-E-R-G. We're also on Twitter, Ron_Nirenberg, and call City Hall. Come down to a public meeting. Just show up for your city. That's what I ask, and there is a place for you.
Thank you.